I'm honored today to have a guest, a return guest, Melissa Birch. For those of you who don't know, I first met Melissa Birch through her wonderful first book, My Journey Through War and Peace, about her experiences behind enemy lines in the Afghan War. Melissa, welcome back to the program. I'm so delighted to see you.
Oh, it's so good to talk to you again. It's been ages.
It's been way too long. I left you, I think the last time we were together, you were living in a bus and traveling across America and distributing your book and getting into all kinds of women organization and orientations. Please bring our listeners up to date on where you are and what you've been doing.
Right. Well, we went on the heroine's journey, literally. We called our bus Gaia, RV actually, to be more accurate. We crossed the United States two times, and I gave lectures at libraries and bookstores and book readings of my journey through war and peace. And, somehow we made a trip here to Greece. My husband's from this island of Tinos, and we were here for the summer, and my husband was like, I want to stay. So we ended up just not going back to the U.S. right away. And living in his grandmother's house, which was a tiny house, which I thought we could adapt easily to after living in an RV. The story goes is that his grandmother threw four rocks and she didn't have a really strong arm, so the house was super tiny. But since then, we've moved to, a two-bedroom, which I think is much more comfortable for long term. So, yeah, we're living on the tiny island of Tinos here in the Cyclades in Greece.
I'm so envious. Of all the countries I visited and lived in, Greece remains right at the top of my list of a good time. Beautiful, beautiful beauty everywhere. Clean, friendly people, honest, just amazing. So I truly am. My heart is warm that you're living there. That's amazing. And should all of the world turn and I end up with more money than I have right now, I'd love to come and visit and hang out for a while.
Oh, you're so welcomed. And it's also like, it's a very elemental place. I think that was really the kind of intensity of the elements, being close to the sea and the winds and the sun and the rocks. It's really living very close to nature here too.
Well, this is the healing that is needed for so many of us. And speaking of healing, what brings us together now is your book, Yearning for Magic.
Well, I think Yearning for Magic picks up for during my 30s, and it was a time when I became a mother. And I think for all of us who became mothers, or I think all of us have that element because we have mothers, in our lives, we all have that deep connection to motherhood at some level. And I think that just made me rethink my whole life. It was a real transformative time. I had so many opportunities to kind of stretch, and through having my son and through infertility and giving birth to him, I discovered homeopathy. And homeopathy was a kind of channel where it just took me on a journey of just what it means to be a healer, what it means to be healed, how to transform oneself. And I think in Yearning for Magic, there is that kind of stretching out into worlds I never even considered or knew about. And now I'm in my 50s, so it's like, I think it's funny to look back because the book opens in Tinos, where I'm living now. And I wrote that without knowing that I was going to be living here. So it's very interesting to kind of have that perspective of a place that has a lot of meaning, but wasn't considered, I didn't consider it my home. And now it is. And it's just layers of meaning, I think, that happens with life. And memoir gives you that opportunity to examine it and review life.
So true. So true. The layering of memoir is very, very important. You had several spiritual experiences, though, that you outline that verge on magical. So would you talk to those for our listeners, as well as give us an idea where the title Yearning for Magic came from?
I wasn't looking for it in my 30s. I think now in my 50s, I'm actually kind of seeking out phenomena, you know, and it's all around me. I live on an island. It's called the Miracle Island. So it's like the Lords of the Greek Orthodox Church. People come here. They climb on their hands and knees for a miracle. They're looking for that kind of, you know, they're desperate, basically, you know, where you get to a stage where they're really desperate. And one of the first phenomena that I had was when I was totally desperate and didn't believe in miracles at all. And my husband, who was actually more out there than me, which people cannot believe, but he was, you know, went to an energy healer. He was in an energy healing school and decided that this was going to work, that he was going to be able to heal his infertility around his sperm. And we were given, I don't know, one in a million chance by the doctors of a natural kind of fertilization. And that was really the first miracle that happened that led to so many more, actually, as the book kind of follows.
It certainly does. You had some in, was it South America, Central America?
Yeah, so I was in Brazil where John of God, so again, you know, I wrote the book without knowing that history, and it's interesting too. That's a place, another place that people go for healing, for miracles. And I saw a man die in front of me, and I was a homeopathic student at the time, and I gave him Carbo-Veg, which it's known to bring the dead back to life, and he came back alive for a few hours. And once you open up that door, you know, and are looking for it or seeking it or yearning for it, I think we start to pay more attention to the possibility of it.
Well, there's so much that we know about spontaneous remission of any kind of disease, that somehow our bodies spontaneously create the antibodies that lock into the antigens. Our bodies come up with the intelligence, and the nature of how our immune system functions is that we have been for eons struggling with every moment we have to create new antibodies, because it's a continual ongoing situation. When our bodies get into a crisis of healing, then it's a lot more difficult to come up with the first responders in our own bodies. But more and more also, people are understanding the power of placebo. So instead of even Western science being solidly locked into, you know, penicillin works and this works and that works, and I'm a believer, you know, if I'm sick, I want penicillin, I want antibiotics, you know, take me to the hospital, I'm that person. But I'm also aware that if I believe in it, it's going to work better. What are your thoughts on that?
I think because I'm a homeopath and I have that experience of working with a medicine that does heal at the deepest level, I think there's a huge difference between chronic disease and acute diseases. And, you know, we're right now in the middle of this crisis with coronavirus and, you know, the fear kind of based stress that a lot of us are feeling around this, and oh my God, you know, what could happen? And actually, one of the things about acutes is that they are opportunities for transformation. And they really require you to stop, you know, if you do get sick. I mean, I know there is the fear that, you know, you could die or I could die from it. But really, when our immune systems are strong, acutes are actually builders of even stronger immune systems for stopping much more dangerous chronic disease like cancer or heart disease, or things that really, if we look at the percentage of people who die, they die from these chronic diseases. Very, very rarely does someone die from an acute disease if you have, you know, clean water and you have a good diet and you sleep and you don't overstress yourself. These are, you know, you really are not likely to die of an acute. I mean, maybe a car accident, something that's out of your control, but you're not really going to die from the flu. I mean, I know that's not what people are thinking right now, but I think then what we have to look at is, okay, what is the opportunity of an acute? What is it that can happen? And sometimes just unplugging, like this sort of self-isolation that everybody's asked to do. This is a chance to take rest, you know, don't plug into the fear and all the anxiety, but really take the time and self-examine your life and look at what's where you're going and probably new ideas, new opportunities that you never even thought were possible might kind of bubble up in your consciousness. And these are the things that really, I think, make a life. And I think that's the opportunity there.
I love that you're taking that idea of the opportunity within the crisis, and I couldn't agree with you more. As we were saying prior to recording, for me, this is a sort of civilization-wide opportunity to retreat in a more reflective way. And it has long been, just jumping over into the medical side of things for a moment, and certainly I don't have any medical degrees, but I do like the way my head comes up with possibilities. And it's long been my understanding or my thinking that people who push themselves through a flu or a cold or just, you know, I've just got this and I just have to keep going, particularly when they're not feeling that strong about it, end up with autoimmune disease, if nothing else, or can end up with autoimmune diseases. That's not the same thing as me saying you blame yourself. It's about the conditioning in our culture that says somehow we always have to keep going all the time. Busy, busy, busy. Well, how are you? I'm busy. I'm not that busy personally, and I'm quite happy not to be that busy because
right.
I'm older and I don't like to be that busy. Well, what are your thoughts on all of that that I've just put in front of you, that plate of spaghetti, mental spaghetti?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Again, you know, I mean, as a homeopath, like cancer is generally people find out they have cancer when they've been at the, you know, really kind of at the height of their lives sometimes. I think it's one of those strange diseases that not all the time, but more often than you'd be surprised, people realize they have cancer when they feel like they've got everything put together, they're at the top of their game, and then they go and they find out. I mean, so what is that about? Question of about what is disease and what does it mean to be healthy and you know, what's going on.
And
so I think people who actually get it, yeah.
Well, I was going to say how we measure being at the top of your game. Like what I see in the culture is being what the culture calls being at the top of your game is a nightmare. You're constantly,
exactly.
For me, it would be constantly on and working and 18-hour days. Like, my gosh, no. I came through a period of time, as many people do, where I was taking care of parents and raising a child, and the things were just, and I was a student, and it had to take place under that kind of August. I can't imagine trying to shape my life to 18 hours a day and being in that kind of constant crisis. And I think that's connected to the cancer as well, because we're actually depleting our life force. What do you think of that?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a really good example of, yeah, exactly. It's our culture idea of what is, you know, optimal performance. I mean, this is just absurd. When you think about
who am I performing for? Yeah.
and actually, I just heard a story that in Silicon Valley, I mean, there's a friend that, you know, has a lot of connections up in the kind of VP level that, you know, people are really trying, you know, getting sick and they want to kind of quit, and they're offering such huge bonuses to try to keep the people staying in those jobs for one more year. I mean, of course, these are the highest level performers, you know, that are getting that kind of offer. But again, it's just a reminder that it's not sustainable. It's not a life that is going to make you happy. It's, you know, there's no magic in it.
There you go. There you go. That's it right there.
Know?
Yeah.
And it'll make you sick. I mean, whether it's, you know, and I think autoimmune diseases as a whole, you know, are on the rise because of the stress factors that people are trying to, you know, survive in this new world that is not healthy.
No, I agree. And what we seem to have done is linked our ability to make money to our survival anxiety.
Yeah.
You know, and one of my favorite stories when I'm talking to people about this involves the chipmunks that live in my area, right around my house, and how I would go out and sit on the chaise lounge, and they would come right up into my face. and look at me like, where's my peanut? So one day I decided I would run an experiment, and I kept putting piles of peanuts outside the door. They never stopped. They never stopped gathering those peanuts. That's the mammalian brain. It's this more means security, but we have to get to the prefrontal cortex. We have to get to the human brain that says, I have enough, and now I want to live differently. I have enough, and now I don't want to embrace my fear anymore, because so much of accumulating money is about fear. And so that to me would make, and I've just thought of that this minute, so that to me would make sense about why people get sick at the peak of their lives, as it were. Now, that's not a panacea, and certainly disease and people's life courses are precious and unique, and I can't wrap it all up. But I think fear is a very important notation, especially in the days we're in right now.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that's where, like, I mean, it's funny to be here in Greece where, you know, people are so relaxed. I mean, it's like,
yeah, get out.
Really, I mean,
April. Don't worry about it tomorrow.
Yeah,
I don't think about it today.
Like, I mean, they still take naps here, you know?
I love that.
Oh. You know, there's still siesta hours. Yeah. So, I mean, it has that. But I think also what is feeding a lot of us here on the island is nature. I mean, that you have access to the sun, to the sea, to the food that's grown here, and all of this is a kind of support that if you're not in an environment like this, then there is this need to try to fill from, you know, and then that costs money to fill with what, you know, what are you trying to feed that's not available, you know, in a such an easy way, like just stepping out onto, you know, the balcony here is just glorious. So that's free for me. But, you know, for a lot of people, it means taking a vacation and getting, you know, time off. And, you know, there's so much that can, you know, be difficult.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Melissa. Now, this has been a great discussion. And I just encourage everyone to get your book, The Journey, about how you became a homeopath and those mysterious and magical experiences you had. It's called Yearning for Magic. Where can they get the book?
It's going to be on, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you know, all the online bookstores, Kobo, and, you know, and I'll try to get it in the library so people can check it out. And that would be great. And drop me a line. Let me know what you think, questions you have, because I think it does really turn people's perspective on what is disease, what is magic. And of course, I'm always, you know, want to encourage women to take the heroine's journey and to have an adventure in their lives. So,
and you are an example of that, my friend. Now, when is the book released?
It's coming out Sunday, March 22nd. Oh. So it's just around the corner.
Yes, yes. Today's the 17th.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, that's been great. It's been great. Will you come back and speak with us again soon?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Charlene. I really appreciate this.
Thank you, Melissa.
Opportunity.
It's a joy as always. Bye for now.